Members, if we can take our seats, I know there's some things that other people have to leave a little early, so we'd like to get started here. Representative Pepin has been very busy over there reading the minutes, so I'm sure she'd love to move the minutes. All those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Today we have a presentation from Phoenix Solutions about plasma arc technology, and this is a bill that and the champion, Representative Thiessen, has been taking this on and moving it around the Capitol, and hopefully we'll learn some things today. I've heard really good things about it. And I'm interested to find out, but unfortunately I'm not feeling very well today, so if it keeps up like this, I may hand this over to the vice chair and have to sit down and listen, pick your brain at a different time. So with that, I think Leonard Frame, if you'd all introduce yourself and for the record and show us what you got.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Len Frame. I'm the founder and chairman of Fluidion Engineering Corporation. I have with me our vice president and chief technical officer, Dr. Gary Hannes, and we're going to share this in what we hope we can is a discussion with you about plasma and what we think it can do for Minnesota. Fluidion Engineering Corporation was founded in 1952. We've been operating for 56 years here in Minnesota. We're currently officed in Crystal and have a test facility in Hutchinson. We started out those many years ago serving aerospace, we're one of the principal test organizations in the world and a principal builder of wind tunnel facilities throughout the world. As a builder of wind tunnel facilities, one of the things that we became acquainted with were plasma heated wind tunnels. Because plasma at that time was used in order to provide sufficient heat to test the reentry conditions for the shuttle and the various vehicles of that kind. And that's where our relationship with plasma started, and with Bud Camacho, who was the founder of Plasma Energy Corporation. We built our first plasma heating system for Kobe Steel in Japan, and delivered that in 1993, and then we went on and we purchased Plasma Energy Corporation in 2000. We acquired staff from a company called Pete. When they dissolved a couple of years later. And so we at this point in time are a blend of our own ideas, the PEC ideas, the PEAT ideas, and that gives us background in the equipment and in the applications. At the present time, we deliver plasma systems with electrodes that last as long as 2,000 hours, that are guaranteed for 2,000 hours, and that have a portable both initial costs and operating costs. And Gary will tell you a little more. What we'd like to do is to have your questions as we go, if you're comfortable doing that. We'd like to have this as a discussion. We want to try and answer the things that are important to you, not tell you the things that are only important to us.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to keep it as short and sweet as I can, and To give you, first of all, an overview, what is this thing we call plasma? A lot of people think it's blood. Well, it's not. It's a state of matter, sometimes called the fourth state of matter. But simply speaking, it's taking a gas, like air, and making it electrically conductive. And in doing so, it acts like a copper wire. You can pass current through it. The more electrons you put through it, the hotter it gets. Typical example is lightning. A lightning bolt is a very short duration plasma dynamic. Arc welders, a lot of you are familiar with those. Those are very, very small scale plasma. When you turn your light switch on at night, you can see this little arc in the switch. That's plasma. So all those are electrical phenomena in which the gas becomes conductive. So what we try to do is harness and control that kind of gaseous environment as a heat source for applying it to various kinds of processes, whether it's melting of inorganic materials like metals or that type of nature and helping extract precious commodities out of that, or converting materials that have energy value and converting it to a different form so it's useful in a different format. We manufacture here in Minnesota, as the largest supplier in the world, commercially proven devices, and we call them torches because they look like a torch. They're long cylindrical tubular assemblies that harness that lightning bolt, so to speak, and discharge it out such that you can direct it and use it in a reactor or a furnace to do whatever you want to do, whether it's destroying hazardous waste, melting materials for metals extraction, or converting waste, whether it's municipal solid waste, stuff out of a landfill, and converting that to another useful form, usually a synthetic gas. It can be used for other purposes to supplant natural gas. Our products run a full range of powers from very small devices, as you see in the figure here, from small kilowatt level, which might be spark plug type sizes, to units that are 2 meters long and maybe this big in diameter that are used in the steel industry and deliver 2,000 to 3,000 kilowatts of power to the process. And we run the full gamut, supplying universities with bench scale, pilot scale type facilities, to commercial operations such as in Japan, where we are the strongest supplier for melting incinerator ash to allow it to be landfilled with a volume reduction and environmentally benign character as it's put in the landfill.
If I might just ask this question, your 10,000 kilowatts, you pulling that off the electrical grid, or is that often generated on site?
If you have a process that is a waste to energy conversion process, the conversion of what available energy is in the waste to then regenerate a synthetic gas at a fairly high efficiency, that is that conversion, and you have enough gas then to generate on site the power for all of the operations in that site, plus a substantial amount to sell to the grid, if you so desire, or the rest of another facility. That's one way you can generate electricity that way, or you can generate enough for that to sell the other syngas as a commodity to another business or another industry. We have a full test capability about an hour west of our corporate headquarters in Hutchinson. This is a 3 megawatt plus facility connected into Hutchinson Utilities. Here we do a number of different things. We do our own R&D testing for product development. We have a pilot plasma gasifier for waste, renewables, biomass conversion to synthetic gas. We also install and assemble everything that ships out, especially internationally, at this facility, the customer comes, witnesses the test, goes through a punch list, accepts it, we create it, export it, follow it to the site, install it, and commission it. The typical stream of activity for us out in Hutchinson. Plasma gasification is really what we want to talk about here, because we want to talk about waste streams that have potential value that can be converted to another form of useful energy.
If I could interrupt you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Dr. Naz, did you say?
Gary Hanus, H-A-N-U-S.
Dr. Hanus, again, just to help me to identify what we're talking about, when you talk about the new, is this a 2-megawatt machine in Hutchinson you're talking about?
Yes.
And does, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hanus, Dr. Hanus, does that mean that's how much power it consumes to run it, or that's how much its effective output is when it gasifies things? And
That is the input power to the device. The device is anywhere between 75 to 85% efficiency. So converting the electrical energy to useful thermal energy for your process. So it's 2 megawatts times 0.8, so 1.6 megawatts delivered to the system. That's pretty typical.
If I may, just because I'm really interested in this kind of stuff.
Sure.
I'm thinking about how hot that torch must be. And what's around that doesn't melt that you can actually contain it with? Or is it just burn into this?
So there's no burning.
No burning.
No burning.
Sorry, that's exactly
right. The torch itself.
Burning going on here.
The torch itself, the plasma jet that comes out, or the plume that comes out that provides the heat source to the process. The center line of that is 10 or 15,000 degrees, so three times the surface of the sun. But as you move away from that out to the outer edges of the plume, it drops off rather dramatically, and that's because internally to the torch you're trying to keep things cool and keep them from melting. And then when that is put inside a furnace, of course the furnace is lined with high temperature refractory materials. You have material in that's absorbing the heat that you're trying to either melt or convert. And so all that is managed such that typical process temperatures, that is, what is coming out of the furnace, might be a few thousand degrees Fahrenheit, 1,100 degrees C, something of that nature.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Yes. Oh,
hey. Hello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Hanus, one more just how does this thing work question, then I'll let you keep going here. Back over here on your description of the torch, you've got non-transfer and transfer.
Yes.
There's a gas input.
Yes.
I understand water's probably the cool to keep the whole thing from melting down, but what's the gas input?
The gas is what becomes the plasma, so it's like the copper rod that's going to conduct the electricity from the torch to whatever it is you're trying to melt or convert. So you must have an input gas. It can be air, it can be nitrogen, oxygen, anything you want, and that's the beauty of the system too. You can use that feature to integrate with the customer's process. Some customers have different objectives, and so the gas selection may be an important chemical decision, which we can service with no problem.
Well, Madam Chair, now he's stimulated a whole raft of new questions, but I'll just hold on here and let you continue, because this is a fascinating discussion.
Well, Dr. Tanis, if you would wait one more moment, we have another question from Representative Bunn.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I just want to make a comment, because I'm going to have to leave in about 3 minutes in terms of where this fits into some of our larger discussions at the state legislature this session and into the future. I live in the East Metro, and in one of the districts that's dealing with CFC pollution in up to a 99-mile square area out in East Metro. And we have multiple waste disposal sites out there, both private and state regulated sites. And in the discussions on how to remediate those sites that has been occurring over the last many months, this technology was brought to both the legislators' attention and also to more to PCA's attention. Is a very new technology in terms of understanding level with our state agency and with legislators, and so I very much appreciate this opportunity for more legislators to hear about it today. So I just want to say, in terms of what we're looking at in terms of solid waste and mixed waste and even chemical waste of various kinds, is that the potential for using this technology both for new solid waste streams that haven't been landfilled yet and other types of waste streams, because as you hear, they can be very toxic and hazardous types of things with this technology as well, but also potentially the, in longer term or even in medium and shorter term to land sites that are proving landfills that are currently problematic in our future could be excavated and used as a fuel source for this technology to produce energy potentially in our future. So this is a very significant innovation that our state should be looking at as a more permanent solution to our solid waste stream now and into the future. So I very appreciate them coming. I have a long schedule meeting at the Capitol building that I have to leave for, but what just wanted to put that before my colleagues here so they understand or hear about the conversations that are taking place about its role in dealing with solid waste and landfill problems in the state.
Thank you, Representative Van. Representative Houston.
And I also have to run on just briefly to speak to some folks. But to Representative Van's point, part of the proposal, and I'll get to this, I think, is there is a landfill. We have a bonding proposal that's just related to it in Hutchinson, and it's next door to a source of this stuff. So it actually, hopefully we can move it forward as part of the bonding process, even though it's not there yet. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Houston. I, too, have an energy bonding bill I'd love to get in somewhere, so I'll be watching that. Representative Winslow.
Madam Chair, my question is not technical. It's more about the market and others doing similar things. And you mentioned your work in Japan. I guess I'm just wondering who out there is doing similar kinds of things. Do they have a track record? What kind of international experience are you? I mean, you have that international experience. I guess the question is, how international is your effort?
Mr. Frank.
Rephrase for me, though. That's my hearing aid.
He would like to know what's going on with ACTIV out there using plasma internationally speaking that addresses a lot of the problems that we're talking about here, and how will we participate in, I guess.
It's the broader market for the waste conversion and waste destruction.
And I'm sorry, I'm wearing two hearing aids, and that means I only hear half of what you say.
Thank you.
And I can't decide which half. So. some examples. Gary has mentioned that we have many systems in Japan that are melting. That is, they're melting fly ash or other inorganics. We've delivered a system to Japan to gasify PCBs with the devices that they are in, so that we're both melting and gasifying. We have delivered a system that in Czech Republic that is gasifying and recovering the precious metals from catalytic converters. We've delivered a system that's in Romania that is gasifying municipal solid waste. Now we deliver components. And those components run, they are torches, they are furnaces, they are torches and furnaces, they are torches and furnaces and technology, and all of these systems aren't all of these things, because the customer may not have decided that he wanted to take our furnace from the U.S. over to the Czech Republic or whatever. But they almost all embody our technology. We have delivered a system to Canada that is converting municipal solid waste to syngas, and from the syngas via an engine to electricity. Those are the ones that I think of, Mr. Winkler. We have, Representative Fitton mentioned it, we have proposed a one-ton-an-hour system with Hutchinson Utilities to be a demonstration a plant of renewables, corn cobs, corn stover,
electricity, that is to send gas and via the send gas to an engine and to electricity. And that is a proposal that is before the Capital Investment Committee now.
I have one question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know which of you is best able to answer this, I guess, but do you have competitors? Is your technology proprietary? How is the market overall in this field developing? Or are you out there really at the cutting edge and nobody else is anywhere close to you?
We.
Sorry?
Well, of course, we have competitors, and our market segment of, let's say, in Japan, we're dominant. Our major competitors tend to be non-domestic. We have had one domestic competitor who has recently been purchased and absorbed by a Canadian company. That was a Westinghouse affiliate that is now part of a Canadian corporation. But we have, it depends on the market. In the metals extraction market, we have a serious competitor in England. In the hazardous waste remediation market, we have one that's not such a serious competitor in France. But the biggest competitors seem to be out of Europe. And other than that, we feel we probably have the strongest position in the markets that we're after, which is gasification and specialty melting technologies and hazardous waste.
Well, the market in the U.S. has been non-existent. We don't. We believe we have a lot of space. We don't. Think landfills are a bad thing to use, so it's only been in the last couple of years that there has begun to be some awakening of interest, and that's primarily driven by the fact that natural gas today is what $9 a million BTUs, and so. It is we can compete. We can put our product in the field. We can provide the equivalent of natural gas at a cost of $6.50 a million BTUs, including capital costs. But we can't necessarily do that yet with all renewables, because renewables also are pretty expensive. You know, corn stover might be $70 a barrel, and at $70, that's $4.50 a million BTUs. So you don't have much left to work with. It is in the U.S. It is really important in some way or another to use the low cost or even the tipping fee things in order to. Make syngas in order to displace fossil fuels.
Mr. Franz, I'm going to just take one moment here to introduce some students in our audience, and then we'll get back to your questions. And I apologize for the interruption. But we have some students from Chaska High School Advanced Placement Government class that are here observing. Hopefully they're learning a lot about this wonderful testimony about plasma. The teachers are Mr. Commerce, Ms. Lyman, and Mr. Binkowski. Welcome to our hearing, and hopefully you'll enjoy what you learn. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Winkler, I think you wanted to continue on, and then Representative Kevin.
I'm sure. Sorry if I'm going too far, but so as a basic, just to understand the position of this, it sounds like cheap and readily available natural gas in the U.S. has been a barrier to further deployment of your technology in the U.S. market. And I don't know whether in Europe it's tighter regulation or lack of availability of natural gas has probably spurred them to move more quickly in this direction. Is that an accurate summary of where the market has been? But changing times may force the U.S. to change and open up more and be more competitive for your product.
Yeah, that's accurate. I think the as an example, right now, we are talking to fairly seriously to a forest products manufacturer here in Minnesota, who is considering displacing their fossil fuel with this equipment. We are providing some technical support to the Rock 10 project in St. Paul, and I know most of you are familiar with that, and in terms of the ways that we can put plasma conversion system over there competitively with natural gas. We, as Representative Blum noted, we are reminding the PTA that in their landfills they have a resource, not simply a liability, and that we believe that we can put plasma in there to the state's benefit. So, even shorter than 2 years, in the last 12 months, things have been bubbling much more in the U.S. and the market is beginning to come alive.
And the final question.
Representative question.
On the landfill conversion or gasification aspect, I think you mentioned that you do have competitors elsewhere. I assume this is happening is that type of project that we're that Representative Bunn was talking about, is that type of project happening frequently or with some frequency other places, and are we just kind of needing to get our heads around it so we can catch up?
Yes, sir, please.
Yes, and there are different business models that that various ones of us use, and we're the only people who supply components. One of the people out there as a project developer is a build, own, and operate kind of business model, and that organization is proposing to put a large system in Florida on the East Coast, north of West Palm and Santa Lucia, I think, But they are not equipment suppliers. They aren't equipment developers. They are project developers, and we have to have those on that. There are several people out there who are as project developers are build, own, and operate. Did I answer you, Mr. Winkler?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Frame. Perhaps we should continue on with the presentation, and then we can get the questions again. Thank you.
Let me continue just as a few examples, and I'll go through these reasonably quickly. I've broken them into two categories. The first two are what I call high negative value waste that we have experience on. By that, I want to emphasize that the objective is effective destruction of this kind of waste. The two components that I want to touch on are PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, which we all know is an extremely hazardous material from the ecosystem viewpoint. And the second is a chemical weapons agent destruction project done for the Department of Defense. On the other side of the coin, a different perspective is taking a high positive value waste. And the emphasis here is efficient conversion. And in this case, we'll be talking about biomass conversion and another very interesting project in which waste tires are converted to useful energy. For PCBs, we are now delivering, in fact, we just finished our witness testing at Hutchinson last week. For the Japan Environmental and Safety Corporation, JEFCO, which is the overseeing governmental organization in Japan for PCB destruction. Our system is going in, being shipped this week, and scheduled for startup operation at the end of this year. And this system will take contaminated components of PCB, whether they're ballasts, transformers, other types of materials, and both gasify the PCBs, destroy the PCBs, and melt any inorganic components that are contaminated with these
material. This is just a schematic of the actual test operation that we did preliminary pilot tests. These were done in Huntsville, Alabama at one of our affiliate sites. And this particular figure here on the right-hand side, I want you to pay close attention to. We speak of the success of such a program in its destruction and removal efficiency or effectiveness of the PCB molecule. And over on the right-hand side, we judge that by how many nines, that is percent. 99 is 2 nines percent destruction, all the way out to 7, 8 nines of destruction. And we consistently, in these pilot operations, were achieving 6 to 7 nines of destruction. The effluent that comes from this is a very nasty material to destroy, and I'm really emphasizing here the output, that is the environmental output from this process, whether it's the wastewater, the gaseous emissions, the slag that comes out of it, or the sludge from the wastewater treatment side. That compared to EPA allowables on the PCBs, just how clean the system is. And the upper figure shows the dioxin and furans, which are the fairly nasty carcinogenic sidelines of the destruction process, orders of magnitude less than what is actually allowed by EPA. On the slag side, on the right-hand side, this is the solid materials that will come through the melting process. It's extracted from the furnace, and in this case can be landfilled because they are below allowables on all TCLP tests. And that's the same is true for the wastewater sludge filter cake that is removed, and in fact that is recycled back into the furnace. And finally, the wastewater actually that's sampled is municipal quality. It can go right down into the sewer if need be. On the chemical weapons agent destruction, this is just an example of one other very hazardous material, mustard gas, nerve agent. All of these were shown with our system in Maryland under the Department of Defense oversight, typically showing 9 nines of destruction, which is necessary for this type of material. On the renewable side, now let's take a different focus. We're taking a positive value in the sense of both the environmental and the economy of the situation feed, which, whether it's a biomass such as forest product waste, corn stover, corn cob, switchgrass, whatever. And this cartoon indicates then the overall features of the process where the waste comes into a reactor, the plasma changes the chemistry, if you will. Synthetic gas comes out. What is synthetic gas? It's a mixture of hydrogen, carbon monoxide. It's a fuel gas. It's very much akin to natural gas. And that can be used later on, as you'll see in this operation here, for generating electricity. You can substitute, if you have a natural gas generating electric generator facility, use the syngas instead, mix it, blend it, so you can generate power, or you can send that power back into your process. You can also use the syngas in a bioconversion role, whether you can make ethanol, other organic acids and salts, single cell proteins. Hydrogen production was a big thing about 4 or 5 years ago. It since has waned, but this process has a ability then to maximize hydrogen extraction from renewable input. And finally, process heating. So with the syngas, if this were connected, say, to a ethanol plant, the ethanol plant uses a lot of natural gas for drying, and for thermal oxidizer, off-gas emissions control, a lot. If you generate it on-site from the waste coming from a synergistic source like field waste, whether it's corn cobs or corn stover, to go along with the ethanol plant, you can generate enough synthetic gas to displace your purchased natural gas. It's a very interesting way to look at the business model. what does a biomass plasma converter of the size of, let's say, 1 ton an hour or 24 tons per day, which is the size that we're proposing for the demonstration facility through the bonding bill in conjunction with Hutchinson Utilities. This gives you a quick view of the essential features, a rough idea. The furnace is maybe 10, 12 feet in diameter, 15 feet high. That's the major processing converter. It's fed by some standard kinds of feed technologies, a hopper which auger screw feeds material in through a metering device into the reactor. The reactor is protected by off-gas means in which if there is any kind of overpressure or leakage, that's all handled so it's not contaminating or causing workers in the area to be exposed to any type of fuel gas. This type of 24 ton per day is scalable to the 100 ton per day, and this happens to be designed for the waste tire conversion facility, which we are fairly close. The financing is still being moved through for a unit in Georgia, which will be taking waste tires trucked in, and it is permitted as a power plant. It is a 30-35 megawatt net to the grid power plant that is being supplied by the waste tires, and those tires are being converted from their raw natural energy containing waste form into a synthetic gas that's used as natural gas to run steam boilers to generate electricity. And finally, this is a bit of a busy figure. We can just blow right by that, but it just indicates to you the conversion efficiency is 85-87%. That is, you know, you have to put something in. You don't get something for nothing. So you put something into the system to change something that's useless but has energy content to something that's useful and has energy content.
Some of you may be wondering why a demonstration plant is necessary. We know a great deal, et cetera. Well, it's not necessary for technologists. It's not necessary for legislators. But it is necessary for bankers and investors, for decision makers, for boards of directors, for people in companies who are proposing to their management and their boards that they should invest. It's really essential for them to be able to say there is a plant, it's in Hutchinson, it's delivering syngas, that gas is being converted to electricity, and it's been running for 6 months, or it's been running for a year, or whatever. I think very few of us know people who want to be the first to spend $1 million for something. But a lot of us know people who want to be first to be second. And that's precisely what we try to get over with a demo plant. It is really very necessary. If it's going to go into Rock 10 as an example, St. Paul Port Authority has to get financing for many millions of dollars. They aren't going to get it unless there is something that they can point to and say this is workable.
Mr. Frame, I want to thank both of you for your testimony. I guess I had a little with Dr. Hannes' final comments of the spinning star into gold kind of table, but I think if you can do it, that's fabulous. And I think the applications are really far-reaching for what you're doing. I happened to listen to your bonding presentation, but I came in a little late, and so I was still thinking plasma blood at the beginning of the presentation, I must say. So this was illuminating from several perspectives for me. I do just have a couple of quick questions, and I come at this, you know, very naive, but Olmsted County has a waste-to-energy burner. There have been, and we produce steam for and electricity for many of our businesses in town through that. But there's been some complaint about air quality, and are you really destroying the the bad things that can get in the environment through a waste energy burner. And so some of the environmentalists have raised some concerns, and as I, you talk about this destructive component to what you're doing, and I guess I was looking for, can you help me understand the difference? I assume our waste energy burner does not use this kind of technology, this plasma technology, but that this is one way we could move, you know, after your demonstration project and whatever, we could move toward making our current waste energy burners more efficient, and perhaps if we can make the environmentalists happy, move to more of this statewide or nationwide or worldwide.
Well, I think the waste to energy burner, if you use that terminology, what it says is it's a combustion system. So you are really oxidizing the fuel to generate heat, and that heat then heats up water, boiler, generates electricity, etc. What this does is bypasses the combustion side of things. The chemistry is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
The output from a combustion system and from this system is two very different sets of molecules, gases, if you will. Which coming out of the combustion system, all of the chemical energy has been used up. You've got heat energy, and you've got things that presumably are cleaned up and controlled, pollutants that many people are concerned about and need to be watched for. From our system, in order to generate electricity, you know, you're generating first the synthetic gas, it's hydrogen and carbon monoxide, completely different than what's coming out of the burned combustion system. Now, you have to use that as a fuel. But is that fuel cleaner? It's more like natural gas. So when you burn that to generate electricity in a combustor, you're going to end up with a much better discharge situation than you would have in a standard combustion system. So I hope I answered your question in that regard.
And yes, the demonstration will then make city councils, residents, and a whole variety of places more comfortable to have something. There are decisions being made every day that the demo can influence.
And I thank you for that. And I know my question was rather naive and simplistic compared to all the applications that you've talked about and you can move for, but it does seem that there is a way to upgrade what we're currently doing to make it better just in a very simple way, simple use of your product. So that was exciting for me because I'm carrying the steam pipe legislation that followed yours that day. So thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Chair Norton. Just to follow on the physics of how I've been given to understand, when I spoke first and talked about burning, I knew as soon as I said it that was exactly the wrong thing to say to a plasma guy, because there's no oxidation. Burning is rapid oxidation, and there's none of that taking place. We're actually reducing whatever feedstock is going in there to its smallest basic element, if I'm not mistaken. As I understand the process, then when you capture the smallest elements, when we reduce it to the smallest elements, because it's so hot, I think it's almost all in a gaseous state.
Yes.
And then we can capture the gas and condense it, and we pull out the mercury, the carbon, the sulfur, whatever. So as I understand, what actually comes out of that plasma chamber doesn't go up a smokestack into the atmosphere. It goes into a whole processing system where everything is cooled and reduced to either liquid, solid, or in the case of hydrogen, gaseous. So none of that happens. There's no flue. There's no chimney. It's a chemical plant is pretty much what we got. We got garbage in and chemicals coming out, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
If I may just point out just an observation, Madam Chair,
and
Representative Thies and I come in at the same time, a few others did too. And this is not to belittle this project, because this is a great project, but I think this is the third plasma torch process I've seen pitched, just so you know. Representative Winkler should hear this. There was one in International Falls, I think, that former Representative Irv Anderson carried. There was one in Hutchinson that Representative Conan... North Redwood. I remember going on a field trip with Representative Conan one day to where their proposal was they wanted 25 cars of trash a day from the metropolitan area, and I can see garbage wars breaking out now if this comes into play. People will be struggling over who gets the garbage and where it goes. So, but as this, I don't know that we've ever had a proposal in front of this committee from a company with the broad shoulders and experience that Phoenix Solutions has, because I think, remember the other two, they were both of them from out of state, but I remember that thought that everything we do has unintended consequences, and garbage wars are going to be one of the consequences of this if it moves forward like we think it's going to.
And to that point, I don't know if this is, sorry, Seth, I don't know if this has been addressed, but in terms of the, because this is an issue that's come up in some other committees as well about, you know, in the Environment Committee about the footprint, carbon footprint of hauling this stuff to the facility, and I don't know if you've addressed the sources of materials nearby in Hutchinson that you'd be able to use in this facility.
Oh, in Hutchinson, in the periods while it, so to speak, is a demo facility, we expect to use corn cobs, we expect to use corn silver, we expect to use wood wafers, is what I'd call it. We expect to use wood of the kind that is chipped in a chipboard kind of plant. Not because that's necessary, but because that's very convenient. That we already have producers of that kind of material in the state of Minnesota. Then I think from our partner is Hutchinson Utilities Commission, which is a municipal utility, and to go beyond there, I really need to let them talk about what their visions are of what they want to be using in the electrical process. But MSW would be typical kind of thing. I think they're planning on running that. And
as I understand it, there's a recycling plant right nearby your facility as well. So the plastic that can't be recycled can be fed through this machine as well.
Representative Garrett.
Madam Chair, back to Dr. Hannes's comments on the last page of your presentation here. A great presentation, by the way. You talked about converting the raw material in to net energy to the grid at about 85%. Is that the number
that's
that you heard?
That's right.
I'm pretty familiar with the best of the coal plants running in the neighborhood.
Back up 1 second. When I said 85%, what I meant was if you have a waste stream that has fuel content coming in, and you can evaluate what that amount is. You go through the plasma gasification side, you generate a synthetic gas, you cool it down, and now you have that primary source of energy in a different state, now a synthetic gas, okay? And now the energy content has been reduced by about 15% by taking into account what extra work you had to do to make that conversion happen. Now there's more inefficiencies in the system to get to electricity, and I think that's where you were coming from.
You're reading my mind.
Yeah.
You're reading my mind. Thank you, Dr. Hannes, because I just want to be sure we're clear that someone's didn't run out here thinking, "Ooh, we get the electricity for 85%.
Right, right.
That would be a small miracle, and we're always striving for that. But it was good that we knew it. Thank you for reading my mind.
but what I think will take place in the demo is that we will demonstrate that the syngas is of suitable quality to feed to a combined cycle gas turbine so that the generation efficiencies can be on the order of 45 or 50% instead of the 25 or 30%. It is one of the advantages of this kind of plasma system.
Madam Chair, thank you. As I understand, and I want you just to help clarify this as we think about it, one of the beauties of the plasma system is that you can actually control what's going on in the plasma chamber to adjust for feedstock in plus what you want to get out. So if you're striving for higher quality, what is it, CH4 methane, roughly? Or
CO and H2.
Oh, okay. And you got to put those together somewhere so that they burn somewhere else. Burn in that good sense. You can actually control for that in your chemical reduction process.
That is one of the
input and output.
Right. The plasma has many of these control features that you cannot find in any other kind of standard gasification process, where you are using combustion as a heat source to drive the gasification.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, if I need to stop talking, let me know. I'm just wondering if you can, and maybe Representative Thiessen can help as well, just give a sense of the finances of the demonstration project, kind of who is in on it and what the state is vital for.
Representative Thiessen.
I can take it briefly. I mean, they have partnered with Hutchinson Technologies. What is it, about a $5 million project that we're looking at? And I think we have funding. We're asking for 1.5 or 2?
Yes, we have Hutchinson Utilities is funding $1 million. We are funding $500,000. We have asked the state for $2.5 million.
That's a form of
money. Other questions, committee members?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm Mary Jo McGuire, and I'm doing some government relations work with Phoenix Solutions, and so I've been working on this, and I just want the committee to be aware. We've been referencing the bonding bill proposal, and we did have a proposal in front of the bonding bill. It actually is not presently in there. We've been asked to work with the other energy request to come up with something, and so I just wanted to let you all be aware that that was what was happening. So I know Representative Thiessen is aware, Representative Hilty, and so we're going to be continuing to work on these issues to try to get as many people aware of them so we can come up with a good plan that perhaps could still get going this year, but it's not currently in the bonding bill. But we, of course, think that this is a good technology for a lot of uses. So I just wanted to make sure that the committee was clear.
Thank you for that clarification.
And while I have the mic, I just want to make sure that we're going to, I know you're going to thank the committee for their time and thank Representative Thiessen and Representative Bunn for their leadership in making these issues come forward. But I know.
And there is a bill in the bonding bill, the International Falls piece got, which is a different type of plasma project, and much bigger, like $28 million. But that is in the bonding bill.
Thank you, Representative Winkler.
And Representative Thiessen, maybe you can just address this. I guess, so we're building a market, it sounds like, in the U.S. for this type of project. I understand the need for a demonstration. But if this is being done elsewhere, how are we prioritizing where these projects are going, and what's the kind of rationale for one demo site versus another, one technology versus another? It seems like there's a lot of kind of state involvement in what is going on there, and I'm just wondering kind of how that plays out.
Jason, do you want to answer that, or when you're test fired?
I think it's a fair question, and I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of logic more than I can share than that. It's the legislature.
Can I offer
Mr. Frank.
May I offer a comment to that? I don't think any other project is proposed in a way that it will increase your knowledge or the state's knowledge, and will make that knowledge available in such ways that people in the state and other places too, but people here can use it for decisions to invest, etc. A project that simply puts in a plasma refuse destruction system of a size that cost $30 million cannot work in a way that straightforwardly increases knowledge. It's got to work in a way that is most profitable, that is all of those kinds of things. And what we have done is to try to size this and do this in a way where it truly is a benefit, not just to us, but to the state. There's no question it will be a benefit to us. But it will only be a benefit to us if it does the same thing that the state needs.
Thank you for that, Mr. Frank. Other comments or questions? Even Mr. Winkler? Any closing comments from our testifiers?
Thank you very, very much.
I'd also like to thank everyone for their excellent questions. I like to be kept on my toes, and I think I gapped asked a little bit, so thanks.
This is the committee to do it. Seeing no other business before this group meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Awesome.